today.
Did it tell you?
Oh, you were invited.
I spoke to about 400 people.
Right. You invited me. I didn't know you were going to
be here. The whole Medrash. He came over to me afterwards. He says, my name's Avram Mordechai. I'm named after your father.
You named him.
I know. He didn't tell you?
No.
Couldn't have been that inspiring. It's a little bit hard to compete with such a cult Torah that's taking place behind me. I'm usually not so good with the with Kol Torah. I'm very into that. That's like a pretty positive thing. That and the music, and it's probably a very hard thing to still be able to get people's attention. So hopefully together we'll be successful. Before we get into our topic, that there were beautiful flyers made. In fact, where's Rabbi Bricks? One thing I have with family, I travel around the world, is I take back with me a few flyers so they know where I really was. So before you take me to the airport, which is pretty, to give me a few. I want to make one thing clear so that you hear it like straight away. I see a former secretary of mine, very exciting. That would be your wife. And now your daughter's mamish running our Beis Yaakov, you know that. Right? And your wife's hearing and shepping nachas. Anyways, I want to make it clear that the reason that I said yes to do this is because of the way I feel about Rabbi Bricks and his entire family. Now, I want to make that crystal clear. I'm only here for a couple of days. There's only a certain number of times that I could speak in the very, very limited time. I'm literally dealing with pockets of 5 and 10 minutes. Today was the 19th yard site of my father's atzal, somebody you knew very well. In fact, I spoke last night for a few hundred people in Medrash Shmuel, and his son came over to me and said, you remember me? I'm named Avram Mordechai after your father. So that was very inspiring. And I really just have to, it's important to me that everybody realizes, while I'm sure I love Ramat Beit Shemesh, and I'm sure it's an amazing off the charts kehila, I'm letting you know, I really, because of the way I feel about Rabbi Bricks, how I have an avas nefesh for him, a deep avas nefesh. I love him. I think his family is amazing. It's because of him and his family that I said yes, and it's an honor to speak in front of you. The topic, Olam Chesed Yibaneh, how to become a giant in Chesed, why to become a giant in Chesed. Did you ever notice that there are 13 attributes of God? Hashem, Hashem, Kel Rachum, V'chanun, Erech Apayim. We sing it a lot. Rabbi Aaron Kotler, my father's Rosh Hashiva, whose yard site is this coming Thursday night, asks an obvious question. Every one of those 13 character traits of God, in Hebrew, they either have one word or two words. I'll give you examples. Chanun is one word, Rachum is one word, Erech Apayim happens to be two. But whether it has one or two words, all you are getting is the name of the trait. God is Chanun, He's compassionate. He is Rachum, He is merciful. He is Erech Apayim, He is slow to anger. So whether in Hebrew it's one or two words, the trait is what you are hearing the description of. There's one exception. In middle it speaks about Hashem being Rav Chesed. Rav Chesed, if you take a look, I should have asked, is the Rav here? No, I meant here. I would have acknowledged his presence. I hope it's not loud enough that I have to acknowledge his presence back there. Rav Chesed means in English abundant in kindness, great in kindness. It's the only one of the 13 that seems to come with a description and an adjective of the noun, of the trait. Why? None of the others have that. Again, whether it's in one or two words, I'm not getting into. But all you're hearing is the trait that Hashem has. Compassionate, merciful, slow to anger. But abundantly kind is the description. So Rabbi Aaron tells us it must be we're not translating Rav Chesed correctly. Do not translate that the Midah of Hashem is Chesed, He's kind. And the adjective describing it is Rav, abundant kindness. That's wrong. Rather, the subject, The name of the Midah is Rav Chesed. Not that Rav is a description of Chesed. Wrong. Rav is the title and the subject. It is as much part of the noun as the word Chesed. In other words, Rav Aaron saying, there are a lot of people who do acts of Chesed. There are other people, not that they do kindness in abundance, that their essence and their mahus is that they are Rav Chesed. And so what I want to talk about tonight is, how are you doing on that chart? I, Baruch Hashem, have the privilege to travel around the world, and I meet lots and lots of people who are great at Chesed. Got it. We're a nation that's Rachmanim, Vashanim, Goyim Lechasadim. I understand. Ask yourself tonight, are you Rav Chesed? That does not mean you do a lot of it. It's a different stratosphere. It's like on steroid-esque Olympics. Are you Rav Chesed? Because if you're not, and I tell people all over myself, you got to become Rav Chesed. You want to know what Rav Chesed means? In B'nai Brak, there is actually two brothers. One, the Vizhnitzer Rebbe, his name is Rebbe Yisrael. He's a big, big tzaddik. I'll tell you a maisa that recently happened with the Vizhnitzer Rebbe, Rebbe Yisrael, not too far from here in B'nai Brak. Somebody came to him and told him that his wife had recently passed away. She was a young woman, so he was an alman. And he was about to marry off his first child the next night. And he went to the Vizhnitzer Rebbe. He was not a Vizhnitzer Chassid, but he wanted a bracha. He's an alman, a man who lost his wife, marrying off his first child. And the Rebbe gives him a warm bracha and says, tomorrow night after the wedding, I need you to come to my house. I need to talk to you. So the Gabbai reminded the Rebbe, if there's a mitzvah tans, he might not be finished till 3 a.m. The Rebbe said, I want to see the man. He told the man, I need to talk to you tomorrow night. The man comes after the mitzvah tans. Indeed, it was about 3:30 in the morning. The Rebbe sits down. The Gabbai's wondering what was so critical that it couldn't wait till the morning. And the man is there after the chasna. The Rebbe turns to him and says, the way the room was set up by the chosin's tish, you were happy with the setup? Now, when the children walked down the chuppah, they were wearing the new clothing, did the clothing fit and look the way you intended when you bought it? Now then, when you gave a choice of the main dish, which was either chicken or meat, what would you say? How many took chicken? How many took meat? These types of questions for about an hour. When the man left at about 4:30 in the morning, the Rebbe asked, the Gabbai asked the Rebbe, what was with all of those questions at 3, 4 a.m.? Now you should open up your heart to what the Vizhnitzer Rebbe answered. It should change you. The Rebbe asked the Gabbai, you want to know what it was about? What's the first thing a person does after they make a chasna or a bar mitzvah, they come home in the wee hours of the morning? They make a glass of hot tea, they sit down with their spouse, and they start discussing every intricate detail, every pitch of gun cuticle. I want you to know it's true. 2 months ago we were privileged to make our first bar mitzvah, my Avra Mordechai. And I came home from the hall 2:30 in the morning. I didn't have a glass of hot tea. It was Thursday night. My wife put up chullen for Friday, so I had a few bowls of chullen. But the rest is accurate. I sat down with my wife and I said, Mimi, let's go through every detail. The Vizhnitzer Rebbe said, who's this man going to go home and do the details with? So I called him over so I should go through all of the details and all of the questions that he would have gone through with his wife. I wanted him to discuss it with me. You see, that's not Chesed. That is Rav Chesed. Again, Rav is not a description. It's part of the essence. You gotta kick it up a couple notches. Lots of people do Chesed. Fine. Leave here tonight and ask yourself, am I Rav Chesed? I'll give you a very simple example of Rav Chesed. I heard this actually firsthand, but I was asked not to say which natural disaster it's referring to. A few years ago, in the northeast area, that's of America, there was a natural disaster that wiped out many people. There was a man that went from riches to rags in about 8 minutes. He lost his home and his business. When he woke up the next morning, he didn't know if he'd have oatmeal to feed his kids. A man went from the greatest of riches to the, literally, to rags. A couple days later, he's in shul, and a business acquaintance says, I'm collecting tzedakah, I'm asking everybody for an $18 check, and I have an $18 check from you. The fellow took out his check, wrote out an $18 check, but he was probably thinking, like, I really hope this doesn't bounce to the sky, but he gave him an $18 check. The next day, the man who wrote out the check, who went from riches to rags, he gets a call from his bank manager, what happened to your account? He says, what happened? You know what happened. He said, no, I mean yesterday. What are you talking about? He said, last night, somebody deposited $1 million into your account. He asked the fellow, he asked the bank manager the name, he got the name, it was the person to whom he gave the $18 check. You see, when the man asked for the check, he was not collecting tzedakah. He simply wanted the man's personal check so he could have the bank name, routing number, account number, so he could inconspicuously slip in $1 million. When he called his friend said, don't mention it. You could pay it back, fine. You can't, fine. We're not discussing it. It's yours. When the bank manager found out what the person did, he called the other managers together and said, look how Jews treat each other. Now let me tell you. The greatness of the story is not giving a guy $1 million. You got it, then give it. That's the way the world is. Some people have it and some people don't. And God created the world for those who have to help those who don't. Giving $1 million is exceptional, but that's in the category of chesed. But he could have given it by calling his friend and say, hey, listen here, you fell on hard times. Can I give you $1 million? But instead, to come up with a way to get the routing and account number and the bank name and put it in with sneeuwish honesty and inconspicuously, that is Rav Chesed, period. And I often challenge people, where are you on the scale? Are you chesed or are you Rav Chesed? I didn't say it's always easy. But then again, you're never defined by what's easy. The greatest leader we ever had, Moshe Rabbeinu, it says that there were three things that he found to be difficult, as Rashi says. So therefore, Hashem showed him a visual. What were those three things? One was the menorah. Another was the coin, which is called the shkalim. And the third one is the moon, which in Hebrew is hachodesh, is the moon. My friends, what's the first letter of those three? The first letter of menorah is a mem, of shkalim is a shin, and of hachodesh is a hey. It spells Moshe. Your name and essence is how you do when something is hard. And by the way, take a look at the last letter. The last letter of shkalim is a mem. The last letter of hachodesh is a shin. And the last letter of menorah is a hey. Once again, it spells Moshe. You won't hear that vart anywhere else. It's not even mine. I can't take any credit. The first letter of menorah, shkalim, and hachodesh this way spells Moshe, and the last letter spells Moshe, because your name is given to you by how you do with things that ain't so easy. How you do with things that are easy tells me nothing about you. You think you know who I am or I know who you are because of what's second nature to you? That doesn't tell me anything. It tells me you're pretty good at it. But I can't say it defines you. It's like not a biggie. But how you do with something that's hard, that, like Moshe Rabbeinu, is your name and essence. When it comes to chesed, it's not always easy. It's not really a great time now. Did I tell you that? you know, our backgrounds are a little different. You're not part of my milieu. We don't even pronounce the Hebrew words the same. Yeah, so? You ever notice there's an interesting Rashi? Rashi says in preparation for Kabbalah Satira, the Jews had to take upon themselves three mitzvahs. What were they? Rashi says, Shabbos, Dinim, and Paraduma. Keeping the laws of Shabbos, Dinim, the judicial system, and Paraduma, the laws of sprinkling the ashes of the red cow. Now, for those in this wonderful community of Ramat Beit Shemesh, I'm sure you have the obvious question. If you're preparing for Kabbalah Satira, I understand that Shabbos is a prerequisite. I understand that Dinim is a prerequisite. You got to have a judicial system. But Para Aduma? That's a preparation for Kabbalah Satira? I got it. You sprinkle the ashes, the guy becomes pure. So that's preparation for Kabbalah Satira. That's what Rashi says. We learned it in Mara because it's preparation. Why? I once heard a great answer from a Rav in the tri-state area. He said, and I think it's a life changer, there are a lot of mitzvahs in the Torah that tell you to be kind. Most notably, v'ahavta l'reacha kamaicha. And I bet you if I did a spot check around the room of the beautiful audience, and I'm grateful so many came out, you could probably give me 30 or 40 different psukim. Para Aduma is the only one that has the following exception. Everybody knows Para Aduma, you sprinkle ashes on the guy that was Tameh, impure, and what happens? He becomes Tahar, he's pure. But the one who was pure becomes Tameh. And by the way, most people think that the one who becomes Tameh is the guy who did the sprinkling of the ashes. That's wrong. That is not correct. The guy who carries the ashes, he becomes Tameh. That means the one who was Tameh became Tahar. And the one who was Tahar by carrying the ashes became Tameh. So you see, my friends, Para Aduma is different. All the other psukim tell you, be kind and do chesed, be benevolent, be a wonderful person. Para Aduma says, you know this is going to cost you. You know, helping out that guy is going to make you Tameh and impure. It's coming at your own expense. Are you still up for the challenge? A lot of people would say, yeah, I would love to help out that guy. You're Tameh, I'm the right man to make you Tahar. But I'm going to become Tameh, it's going to cost me, it's at my expense. I got to buzz out, it's not a great time. Says Rashi, do you want a prerequisite for Kabbalah Satira, Shabbos, Dinim, and Paraduma? You know why? Because Paraduma tells you that you have to be willing to give up something even when it ain't so easy. That is why Paraduma is a prerequisite for Kabbalah Satira, because it's not enough to do chesed. You got to do chesed even when it's not so simple. Moshe, Menayra Shkalam Achaydesh, it defines you. It's not always such an easy time. There's a Rav in New York that I have the privilege of being close with. He's a Rebbe of mine, Rebbe Avram Halevi Shor, a son of Rebbe Gedalia Shor. He wrote about 30 volumes called Halekach V'Halibov. This story happened in June to a friend of mine, but he asked me not to mention his name because part of the story is a bit sensitive. In June, my friend found out that a son of his was not accepted into a particular yeshiva. He called his Rebbe, Rebbe Avram Shor, and asked, could you help me get him into yeshiva? He called him on a Tuesday afternoon on his cell phone. They schmoozed for a long while, and he went on to tell him what he thinks. They schmoozed back and forth, long time. And then Rebbe Avram Shor told my friend, you know, I need more time to think about it. Call me back tonight. He calls him back Tuesday night on the cell phone. He gets him. And once again, Rebbe Avram Shor is discussing the pros, the cons. I still need more time. Call me tomorrow. Excuse me, tonight, Tuesday night. He calls him a third time. A lengthy conversation ensues. And then he says, you know, get me the email of the yeshiva. I want to send them an email and tell them why I think they should reconsider and take your son. Call me tomorrow. They spoke Monday night, Tuesday afternoon, Tuesday night. Call number four is Wednesday afternoon. Nobody answers the cell, so he calls the house. The Rebbetzin answers, and my friend says, can I speak to Rabbi Shur? He's not available right now. He's meeting people. No problem. I just need to know. He asked me to call him. They give him an email address. When's the meeting going to end? I can't know that. And my friend wondered, what do you mean you can't know that? What do you think? When is it going to end? When are the people going to leave? So she said to my friend, I can't know that. My husband's in the middle of sitting shiva. I said, what? Your husband's not sitting shiva. He's telling her, your husband's not sitting shiva. My husband's sitting shiva. Sunday, his sister died. He's been sitting shiva since after the kvura, Sunday afternoon. He says, that's impossible. I called him Monday night, Tuesday. Tuesday night, he gave me all the time in the world. He spoke with me endlessly and patiently. She said, yeah, he was in the middle of sitting shiva. He just didn't tell you. That's Parah Aduma. I told you it's easy. It always has to be a cushy, warm, and fuzzy time. When my friends found out, he went the next day from where he lives to Flatbush to be Menachem Avil and to ask apology. I didn't know that you were sitting shiva. Now, no one should ever know from it, but if a person is an Avil, the Avil has to start the conversation. You're not allowed to start it. They have to start it. So my friend sits down waiting for Rabbi Shur to start the conversation so he could apologize. And what do you think Rabbi Shur says as soon as he sees my friend? How does he start the conversation? He says to my friend, Nu, do you have the email address? I want to write the email. That's Parah Aduma. That's Rav Chesed. And that's what it means that a person is willing to be mitaher someone else, even if it comes at his own expense. Now, I'm not telling you not to take care of yourself and be there for yourself first. I understand that. Nor am I telling you there's tons and tons and tons of chesed in the world. I understand. But Reb Aaron says chesed is not enough. You've got to earn the title of Rav Chesed. And like Parah Aduma, it's not always so simple. It comes from something that Reb Nosson Tzvi Finkel, the Mir Rosh Hashiva, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Levracha, a few years ago, the last Yom Kippur of his life. It's interesting. He was asked a question right before Yom Kippur by a big Baal Chesed and Tzadik in Flatbush who died a few years ago, Shlomi Gross. There's a fabulous picture of the two of them, Matzah Yom Kippur. Who would have known it was the last Yom Kippur for those two? Before Yom Kippur started, Shlomi Gross asked Reb Nosson Tzvi Rosh Hashiva, when I daven on Yom Kippur, what should I think about? He looked at Shlomi and said, on Yom Kippur, when you daven, what you should think about? Think about someone else. That was Reb Nosson Tzvi's answer. You want to daven on Yom Kippur? Think about someone else. That's Parah Aduma, it's Rav Chesed, it's what Klal Yisrael needs. I'll tell you what it means to think about someone else. I have an uncle that passed away more than 20 years ago. For those who are familiar with Baltimore, Maryland, he was a legend. His name was Reb Binyamin Steinberg. He was the principal of the Beis Yaakov of Baltimore. Henoch Teller wrote a book on him. His wife and my mother are twin sisters. Uncle Binyamin died many years ago. When my cousins were sitting shiva for him, one person came and told my cousin, you got to hear a great story about your father. You know, a few months ago, a little while ago I should say, we were in the cemetery. I was davening by a kever. It was right before Yom Kippur. People go to the kvarim to daven. And your father was davening by some kvarim and he saw me. This is what the guy is telling my cousin who's sitting shiva for my uncle, his father. And he came running over to me and he said, you know, you have an older sister. She needs a shidduch. You're learning in yeshiva. You have to make sure that you speak to this person and this person and this person. It's your obligation to find a shidduch for your older sister. So he tells my cousin, it is an amazing Erev Yom Kippur. Your father must have been davening his heart out. He wasn't well. And what does he have on his mind? Someone else. a shidduch for my older sister. Isn't that great? And my cousin says, yep, it's great, but you don't know the rest of the story. At which point he tells the one who just told him the story, my cousin says, when you saw our father, Erev Yom Kippur, in the Beis HaKvaros, he was not davening. He had just come from the doctor, and the doctor told him that there was no hope, and it was over. So on the way home, he stopped off at the Beis HaKvaros, because he had to let his family know where he wanted to be buried. He didn't know if he wanted to be buried next to his Mashkiach of Ner Yisroel, of David Kronglass, or next to his in-laws, meaning a Bubby and Zaidi of mine. So actually, when you saw our father, he was picking his own kever, and even so, he came over because you got to think about someone else. That's Rav Chesed. It's not rocket science. I'll tell you a maisa about a Rav in the New York area. I didn't ask him Rishus to use his name, although I'm very close to him. But since I did ask him Rishus, I'm not going to use it. He's a big, big Marbitz Torah in the New York area, ginormously large. His wife, a young woman in her 50s, is currently very ill. She needs Rachmei Shemayim Merubim. Now, this Rav has a Talmud whose name is Bezalel. I happen to be very friendly with Bezalel. That's the real name. Bezalel told me this story, so I heard it firsthand. Bezalel goes over to Rabbi so-and-so and says, you know, when is the Rebbetzin beginning that very delicate surgery and procedure? He says, next Tuesday at 2:30. Bezalel says to the Rav, Rebbe, you're a Talmud of Rav Moshe Feinstein. I'm going to fly to Eretz Yisroel. I'll make sure to be at the Kever next Tuesday, 9:30 p.m., which 7 hours earlier is 2:30 your time. And as the Rebbetzin is being wheeled in for a very, very delicate procedure, I will daven by Rav Moshe's Kever for the Rebbetzin's refuah. Bezalel did that for this Rav. Bezalel tells me he's at the Kever, it's 9:30, he calls the Rav, he says, Rebbe, I'm at the cave. He says, good, Bezalel, the Rebbetzin's here, she's about to be wheeled in. I've been davening by Rav Moshe's caver. The Rav says, Bezalel, you're there now? Yeah? Do me a favor, put the phone on speakerphone. Now let me make something clear, a halacha you should know. When you're davening at a caver, you can never, ever, ever ask the person who you're davening by that he should answer your prayers. God forbid. Your two choices are to ask Hashem to answer your tefillahs in the merit of the one whose kever you're at, or to ask the one whose kever you're at, take my tefillahs to Hashem and ask Hashem to answer my tefillahs. Now he says to Bezalel, put it on speakerphone. It's on speakerphone? Yeah. Bezalel tells me, I'm holding the phone like this, and I heard every word that this Rav said. The Rav says to Rav Moshe, Rebbe, tell Hashem I need my wife. You know I'm teaching Torah about 17 hours a day, but it's only because of her. She frees up my time. She takes care of things. I know I should teach 18 hours. I know I should do more, and I'll try. But the only reason I could do what I do is because she frees me up. Tell the Ribbono Shel Olam that I need my wife. Please, he begs Rav Moshe, ask that to Hashem. And then he says, Bezalel, the Rebbetzin's being wheeled in now. But she's motioning to me, if the phone's still there, she wants to take the phone. Yes, Rebbe, it's still here. He puts the phone by the caver and says, okay, I'm giving it to the Rebbe. And the Rebbe says, Bezalel, the phone's by the Rosh Hashiva of Moshe's caver? Yeah. As she's being wheeled in, she says, okay, because I now want to say something. And she says to Rav Moshe, Rosh Hashiva, Rebbe, please, there's a woman in Chicago who's not well. She's an amazing woman. Please ask Hashem that she be granted a refuah shalema because her family really needs her. Please, here's her name, daven to Hashem on her behalf. And with that, she was wheeled into surgery. She's being wheeled in for such a delicate surgery, begging Hashem for Chaim Aruchim, and the phone is by Ramesh's caver, and all she's thinking about is someone else. There's a woman in Chicago who needs Rachmei Shemayim. Ask Hashem on her behalf. That's a real story. It didn't happen in White Russia in 1870 or in Kovna in 1920. It happened a few months ago in New York. That's a woman who understands that you got to think about someone else. And yes, who understands Parah Aduma means even if it comes at my own expense. And that's why I chose the topic for tonight. Olam Chesed Yibana only happens by Rav Chesed. It's how to become great. I guess you could sum it up by saying it's why the Vision Tzur Rebbe spoke to a man 4 a.m. It's why a man inconspicuously slipped $1 million into a guy's account. It's why Reb Avram Shor never told someone that he was sitting Shiva. And it's why that Choshev Rebbetzin, may she have a Refuah Shalema, only thought about someone else. Because that's what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants. He wants one Yid to make sure that they're there for another. I'll just tell you a few final things before we conclude. Of the 10 Makos, I don't know if you know, Chazal tell us that the worst one was Choshech. Choshech was the worst. Leaving out Makos B'chairis, the first 9. The Kash is obvious. Why is Choshech the worst? In the other Makos, there was much larger loss to human animal life, certainly as far as the Egyptians were concerned. So why is Choshech the worst? Reb Shapsa Yudalevich, who was a maggid in Yerushalayim, who passed away a few years ago, who and I lived in Eretz Yisrael, I was privileged to know, we lived on Sarotsk, and I went to him often for Havdalah Matzah Shabbos. Reb Shapsa Yudalevich, in his inimitable style, said, you want to know why Choshech's the worst? You're right, in the other plagues, the loss of life, human and animal, was much larger. But at the end of the day, people at least had each other. A shoulder to cry on, someone to commiserate with. In Choshech, the Torah says, "Lo yiro uish asochev lo kamu uish mitachtav," which means we were alone. And Reb Shapsi says it clearly. Being alone is the most miserable feeling in the world, bar none. Ask a Rav and they'll tell you, people will tell them, I can handle a lot, but not being alone. And Memela, says Reb Shapsi, Choshech is the worst, because although it wasn't the largest loss, they were alone, and when you're alone, it's the worst. Rav Chesed means making sure nobody's alone. I want to end with a powerful vort that I'm only ending because we have to daven. I need people to daven Mara with me, and I have to catch a plane. Be a nice thing. Take a look at the first Bala Turim in Ve'eschanon. The first Bala Turim in Ve'eschanon says, and I heard this explanation of it from a Rebbe of mine in Montreal, the Jibo Dayan. I have said this in so many places, many of them have actually taken the catchphrase. In one particular seminary I said it in 2 years ago, the night of the Harnof massacre. I landed when the massacre was happening, and a few hours after the Levaya, I was in the seminary speaking, and one of the girls turned the following into a song. The Bala Turim is quoting Moshe Rabbeinu, who's asking Hashem to let him into Eretz Yisrael. Now, he was not allowed in because, we know, perhaps it was because of hitting the rock. But at the point that Moshe Rabbeinu was asking permission to go in, says the Bala Turim, Moshe Rabbeinu said the following, Chizakti es Yisrael, Ulai Yerachem Olai. I gave chizuk to a Jew, so perhaps God will have rachamim on me. In other words, and I hope I can go into Eretz Yisrael, the kash is obvious. If you were Moshe Rabbeinu and you were beseeching Hashem to let you into Eretz Yisrael, or I ask you a question, people in Ramat Beit Shemesh, fill in the blank. Moshe Rabbeinu is begging Hashem to let him into Eretz Yisrael. He davens 515 tefillos and says, let me in the merit of, in the merit of, it should probably go something like this, in the merit of the fact that lo kum bi Yisrael Navi Kemoshe, he was the greatest Navi, he was the greatest leader, he went on Har Sinai, he was the Mekabel HaTaira, he was the Nisein HaTaira, he was by the burning bush, the snare. He was with the Shechina. He got closer to Hashem than anyone. Like, how about all those?
Yet when Moshe Rabbeinu asked to beseech HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, please let me into Eretz Yisrael, he doesn't say because of the Navi that he was, he doesn't say because he was the greatest leader, he doesn't say because he was the Nitzan HaTorah, he doesn't say because he was the Mekabel HaTorah, he doesn't say because he spoke to the Shekhinah, he doesn't say because he was by the Sna and many other things. There's only one thing that he says, Ribbono Shel Olam, Chizakti Es Yisrael, I gave strength to a fellow Jew, Ulai Yerachim Olai, in that Zechus, please have Rachamim on me. Because Moshe Rabbeinu understood that the ticket is Chizakti Es Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu could have said a large list of things, only a small sampling and potpourri of which we mention. Yet Moshe Rabbeinu says, Ribbono Shel Olam, Chizakti Es Yisrael. Chizakti Es Yisrael. I strengthened a fellow Jew, Ulai Yerachim Olai. And I'll just end by telling you the beauty of Chizakti Es Yisrael. I make sure ever I say that word to end with the following sentence. Very often you could hear about a topic that applies to 86% of the people. Some may even hit a high 90. Sometimes you hear about a topic and like 52% of the people say, now I can do that. There's one exception. Or maybe more, but I'll give you one. Chizakti Es Yisrael on both ends. Number one, everybody, and I mean everybody, needs chizuk. Don't let anybody ever tell you, me, no, really, I mean it, not me. It's not true. Some people need physical, psychological, emotional, financial, spiritual, but everybody, period, needs chizuk of some sort at different times. And guess what? Everyone and anybody can provide chizuk. You could be 4 years old or you could be 114. You could be a man or a woman. You could be frum from birth or a balas tshuva from 2 seconds ago. You could be healthy or chalila not. Everyone in their own way inspires and gives chizuk to someone else. It is 100% all across the board. 100% need it and 100% can provide it. May it be the will of the Ribbono Shel Olam. I'm sure that many people are Balei Chesed, but frankly, it just won't cut it. Last I checked, we're still in the middle of this bitter and funereal Golos. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, I want you to emulate me, and you have to emulate him by being Rav Chesed. Just as he is, so must we be. And like Moshe, it's not always easy. The Mem Shin Hei, though, is my essence. And yes, Parah Aduma is a prerequisite to Kabbalah Satayra. Our Gedolim do it. And then people that might be our next door neighbor as well teach us. Let's be Zaycha to remove Choshech, because there's nothing as miserable as being owned. And in the merit that people here in Ramat Beit Shemesh and around the world will tell themselves, Chizakti Es Yisrael. What did you do today to really strengthen the plight of a fellow Jew? In the schus that the Ribbono Shel Olam sees, enough Chizakti Es Yisrael, may Choshech be a thing of the past and may it be replaced speedily with Eirei Shel Mashiach.
No! Are there 10 guys who didn't have a marv yet? Show hands, that marv yet?